Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome. It's episode 107 of We Are Going Up. Strap yourselves in. I'm Mark Crossley, and along for the ride we have got Watford's very own David Cameron Walker.
Watford's very own, yeah. From the town, not the team.
And Siren Sister's favourite son, Carl McQueen.
Hello, although I probably could play for Siren Sister Town there.
Are you Siren Sister's favourite son? Who else is famous from Siren Sister that would beat you?
Doesn't Liz Hurley live there?
But she's not from there. But
and
look,
she would be the daughter. Yeah. So you could still be Siren Sister's famous
son. I'd happily be related.
Who very else? Good Anyone? Point. Anyway.
No, you.
Famous people live there. Dom Jolly lives there.
More important news.
Served him in Waitrose once.
More important news.
The poor man's Dom Jolly.
Just breaking. Sorry to sort of trample all over this. As we record, you've got a tweet, DC, that you want to share that Bury Football Club have just released.
At Bury FC Official have just tweeted, "We are delighted to confirm that David Flitcroft has been appointed manager at the JD Stadium with immediate effect. Hashtag Bury FC."
So
completely inexplicable use of capital letters.
Much like Dom Jolly, I suppose.
Hashtagging their own tweet as well, which is a little bit odd. I'm happy with that. I think that's a good appointment. Although I've literally just in the 30 seconds before we started recording, I've gone straight on the forum, straight away. All the idiots are out saying terrible appointment.
Why would the idiots think this is a terrible appointment?
Because they could have appointed Sir Alex Ferguson, though, and in a city.
We haven't had the best record with appointing sort of players that have used to play for us. And
forgetting that, this is a man that.
No, yeah.
Until recently.
Yeah, and let's remember, a lot of people say, oh, out of his depth in the Championship or whatever, and you know this season they've really struggled. Well, this isn't the Championship we're in, this is League Two.
Although I suppose his last action in League Two would have been as part of the promotion winning team with Keith Hill at Rochdale.
Apart from the Rochdale bit, I don't have a problem on the Keith Hill bit.
Do
I don't
people have a consider him to be more of a Rochdale man than a Bury man?
I don't know. I'm not sure. No, I think he's kind of equal, really.
Yeah.
I think that's really good. Really good appointment. I was actually going to mention managers because we should thank you for sticking with us for that absolute marathon last week. And I don't think any manager has lost his job since. He's been sacked since.
No.
A couple have moved around, but no one has been sacked yet. It'll happen probably in the next sort of hour or so. We should tell you what's coming up on the show this week then. We are going to be discussing Richie Barker and Steve Coppell going to Pompey. Steve Cottrell's going to Bristol City and all the weekend's action, the FA Cup third round draw as well. Plus, Uwe Rosler said auf Wiedersehen to Brentford because he's now the new Wigan manager, and we're going to find out how the Bees are going to cope without him. Nick Bruzon, writer of the Last Word Brentford blog, is going to be on the line to talk to us about Rosler, the next man in, and the newly approved plans for that 20,000 capacity all-seater stadium at Lionel Road. First, though, let's kick off in the Championship, shall we, with the standout result of the weekend. It came at the iPro Stadium, or Pride Park, I think, as we're all calling it.
Yep.
Derby 5, Blackpool 1. Derby thrashed Blackpool to go fourth in the Championship. A hat-trick from Chris Martin, including two penalties, goals from Craig Bryson and Richard Keogh. And what a run they are on. And I'm pleased to say on the line right now to speak to us about it is Steve Nicholson, who is the chief football writer at the Derby Telegraph. Steve, thank you very much for coming on the show. 23 points from 30 so far under McLaren. Derby have actually got 7 more points at this stage of the season than they did a year ago. Has this start exceeded all expectations?
Well, I think if any new manager comes in and wins 7 and draws 2 of the first 10 games, that's got to exceed expectations. I'm not sure how many other managers have ever done that, I must be honest. Yeah, he's come in. I think the thing with Steve McLaren is, and he's made no secret of this, he's inherited a very good side, you know, and a good squad. He said that from day one. And what he's done, he's put his own stamp on that squad and on that team, and the results have followed. So all in all, the start has been fantastic.
When we spoke to, I think it was Owen Bradley from BBC local radio up in Derby, when Clough was sacked, there was a sense when we talked to him that people were disappointed that Nigel Clough had gone, but there was also an understanding that perhaps it was time for somebody to try and push things on a little bit, and certainly that Clough had left a very good legacy. And as you said, McLaren has been left a good squad to work with, and perhaps he's just put his own little spin on things, but you know, the players were there and he's kind of made all the difference.
Yeah, it's very interesting. The Nigel Clough sacking at the time was a shock. They weren't doing that badly. People who've watched them all season will tell you, as I know, that they were actually playing some good football for most of the season. Anyone who saw them win at Brighton and saw them win at Yeovil and saw them win at Millwall will have seen the type of football they were playing. The problem they had, they were scoring goals, but they were conceding them as well. And what Steve McLaren has done, and he's a very good coach, by the way, Steve McLaren, if you ever get the chance to watch him, do so. What he's done, he's tightened them up. And it's not just about defending better. It's about when you haven't got the football, getting back in position, getting your shape right. And what he's done, he's actually tightened that shape up when they're not in possession. So he has stamped his own mark on it. Nigel Clough, for 4.5 years, did everything really he was asked to do. He sorted out a real mess that he inherited, and it was always going to take a number of years. And he did that, and he moulded the majority of this squad and team. And then, of course, he was sacked. I went on record at the time as saying I thought the timing of his sacking was poor. It happened within a few hours of the defeat at Nottingham Forest, which is never a good time. But what's happened since, you know, you move on, you have your say, everyone has their opinion, and then people move on and Steve's come in. And as I said before, he's done a fantastic job. And all you've got to do is look at the table now. They've risen from 14th to 4th. And they've got themselves in a very healthy position.
Steve, are you perhaps surprised at how quickly McLaren has shaped things, given how long Nigel Clough was at the club? And I know Steve McLaren has, you know, previous links with Derby, but it doesn't strike me as a man who will go into a dressing room and really shake things up, be it, you know, through passion and what have you. So are you surprised he's taken to it so quickly and so well?
Well, the interesting thing is when you speak to Steve McLaren, I've known Steve now for... Well, since I first came to Derby in 1985, he was playing for Derby County at the time, and I started covering Derby County reserves in 1985. And he was in the reserve team at the time. He'd lost his place in the side to John Gregory. So I've known Steve a long time, and Steve will tell you that he's come in here and he's actually not changed an awful lot. In the dressing room, he's not gone in and he's not shaken things about and all that, because he said right from day one that a lot of it was in place. As I say, he's just added here and there, tinkered with the shape slightly. And what we must remember about Steve McLaren, and you know, a lot of journalists ask him, you know, is this about rebuilding your reputation as a manager? Because it took a bit of a bashing with the England situation and again at Nottingham Forest. But Steve McLaren has always been a top-class coach. And when you've got a top-class coach working with a good squad, then you've always got a chance. So, in a way, I'm not surprised, because I always felt Derby were playing particularly well anyway. It just needed a few things tweaking here and there, which often it does. Often in football, that's all it needs. And a fresh pair of eyes came in, and they looked at it, and he's actually turned things around very, very well. Whether or not Derby would have gone on this run anyway, we'll never know now. And that in some ways is the beauty of football. You know, you move on and you see what's next. And Steve McLaren has certainly come in and done that. And as I say, let's not forget about Steve McLaren. He is a top coach.
Just looking at the team that McLaren's named in the last two games, you've got Lee Grant in goal, Andre Wisdom on loan from Liverpool, obviously at fullback, Keogh and Buxton centre-back, Forsyth the other fullback, Craig Bryson, John Eustace midfield, Simon Dawkins, Will Hughes, Jamie Ward, and then Chris Martin up front. I see positives all over that team. I watched the game on Saturday against Blackpool, and you know, rampant, weren't they, once they got the goal back into the game. And you know, Hughes is a player that everyone's talking about in terms of being linked with moves to like likes of Liverpool and Premier League teams sniffing around him. But the player that really excites me and that I've seen in the last few games is Simon Dawkins, a player on loan from Spurs who has had kind of potential for a long time. He's a strange player that in the fact that he's 26, but Spurs kind of persisted with him despite releasing him once. They brought him back. He's been over in the MLS, but he's a player that's always had potential. Now, finally seems to be realising it under McLaren. He seems to have been involved in a lot of the goals recently, and he looked excellent against Blackpool on Saturday.
Yeah, it's very... I mean, what an interesting story this is. you know, Simon Dawkins, not played the first team game for Spurs, I don't think. Couldn't really find his way. Went to the MLS, did quite well. And was probably wondering, you know, what next for him, really. Steve McLaren was aware of him. He took him on trial to Twente in Holland when he was manager there. And what's happened is Simon Dawkins has come in. He's got better with each game. And that's not a surprise because, of course, his match fitness would need to have improved. And that's why on Saturday I thought we saw his best game Saturday. He's looking fitter, he's looking stronger, he's looking more confident. Very direct, gets the ball, runs at people, troubled Blackpool all afternoon. Probably should have got a hat-trick himself, actually. Chris Martin got one. Simon will be a bit disappointed he didn't score himself. But yeah, it's a great story, this one. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens with him in January. I know Derby are very keen to keep him. I think his contract with Spurs runs to the end of the season. So it'll be very interesting to see how that pans out. And he's done very well. And as you say, the side, there's a lot of positives in this side. And the beautiful thing about the side is it's got a balance of youth and experience. And I know we talk about that an awful lot in football. And it's very important. And Simon is just 26. He's not what you call a young player, but in experience terms, he is. Will Hughes certainly is. And then you've got people like John Eustace dropped in, super experienced, knows where to stand, knows, spots trouble, spots danger, goes in, mops it up. Then you've got, you know, Richard Keogh at the back, Lee Grant. You know, it's got a lovely balance about it at the moment. So I think that's why there's real excitement about the place.
And a statistic that will excite every Derby fan is that last season in 46 league games, they scored 65 goals. This year, in 19, they've scored 40.
Nine more than Leicester City, I think, is the stat. All season, I'll say this again, all season, you know, they scored three at Yeovil, they scored five at Millwall, and they've just kind of continued. And when they've got the ball, and when they play at a high tempo, which is absolutely essential to Derby's team, playing at a high tempo, when they do that, teams are finding it really difficult to cope with them. Wigan, a couple of weeks ago, first half at Wigan, Derby absolutely swept them aside. They went 3-0 up, I think, in half an hour. Could have been more. And Wigan really didn't know what hit them. And now Wigan aside, until very recently, that people fancied maybe, you know, to kind of bounce straight back. But Derby, you know, made them look very, very ordinary that day. And playing at high tempo, a lot of energy. Craig Bryson typifies this. You know, I'm not sure. I mean, Paul Green used to play for Derby. He's now at Leeds. Greeny is a great lad, good midfielder, could run forever, Paul Green, but Craig Bryson, he covers some distance on the pitch, and say when they play at high tempo, teams are finding it very difficult to live with them.
Do you think, Steve, as well, with the January transfer window approaching, people like Will Hughes may depart, or is Steve going to put his foot down? I know he's brought in a couple of people on loan already, Michael Keane from Man United, for example, who played at Leicester last season. So would he also be tempted to bring people in over the coming weeks just to kind of strengthen things up in certain positions?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I've written a piece for the Telegraph tomorrow, and it's basically about the window. And what I've said is that Steve McLaren's told me that the idea is to get to January the 2nd, which is obviously they play Wigan on January the 1st, get to January the 2nd, have a look where they are, assess the situation, see what they need, if anything, to push on again. So I think there's always a possibility of something happening. But the most important thing in January, I feel, looking at the team at the moment, will be keeping hold of the best players they've got. We all talk about Will Hughes, and teams were told, you know, all the speculation, and I'm fed up with the speculation. I've been following the speculation on Will Hughes for probably 2 years now. All these clubs who are meant to be making or preparing these bids, well, they're taking so long to prepare bids, they must be hefty bids, that's all I can say. But he's a real talent. Craig Bryson, you know, clubs will have noticed the improvement in Craig Bryson. Derby signed him from Kilmarnock for £450,000. What a snip that's proved. You know, at the moment, there are a few midfielders in the Championship as good as Craig Bryson. He scored 8 goals, he's got 7 assists. Steve McLaren at the weekend, you know, said, gave us the old cliche, you know, box-to-box midfielder. I think we'd lost those in football, but actually with Craig Bryson, we've actually got one in him. You know, Chris Martin up front is scoring goals, a clever player, you know, good control, can play with his back to defences, very, very good. So clubs will be very aware of all Derby's players at the moment. So one of the main things about January, you know, as well as trying to maybe tie down Dawkins and maybe extending Michael Keane's loan, one of the good things or the important things about January is hopefully keeping hold of their own good players.
On Chris Martin, having an excellent season, got the hat-trick at the weekend, and describe him as a clever player there. Well, somebody who didn't think he was too clever was a Blackpool manager, Paul Ince, who was scathing after the game. What was you have to say, after looking at the replay, it did look like he went down very easily for that first penalty.
Yeah, I mean, what Chris is, he's a target man. Derby play into him, and then he allows the likes of Bryson and Dawkins and Ward and Russell and even Will Hughes to play off him, and it's worked perfectly all season. What he's very cute at is when the ball goes into him, he's feeling a defender in his back, and actually, most of the time, you know, you can win free kicks that way, and most of the time, they are free kicks. Now, obviously, the
penalty is what's known as a Kevin Davies.
Oh, listen, it's all part of the game, and it's a vital part, and if you've got a good target man, it works a treat. The penalty decision after 40 seconds of the second half against Blackpool was a key moment in the game.
Changed the game.
Yeah, it did. I mean, Derby were on top anyway, but sometimes you need a break. All teams need a break. All teams need a bit of luck. There was a bit of contact. The contact, as you've all probably seen, was outside the box anyway. The contact was minimal, and Chris went down. When it happened in real time, I didn't think it was a penalty. And obviously, what I've seen since, I've not changed my mind. It wasn't a penalty. But that's what happens in football. Sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't. And to be fair to Derby, they got that break at that moment, and they took full advantage of it.
So Derby are on this incredible run, and I'm just looking at the fixtures coming up. Before the turn of the year, Charlton away, Doncaster at home, Huddersfield away, Barnsley away. So that's Charlton, Doncaster and Barnsley, three teams who are right down there. So potentially good fixtures. And then to start the new year, after the Wigan match at home, Chelsea at home in the FA Cup. It's a very exciting time to be a Derby fan.
It is exciting. I mean, if we take the league games first, there's five league games before Jose Mourinho brings his side to town. Five important league games for Derby that put themselves, as I said earlier, in a very healthy position. This weekend's game at Charlton will be my 570th consecutive first team game I've covered for Derby.
That is some effort.
when you've seen that many consecutive games, and most of them in the Championship, we won't touch on that one season in the Premier League for now. I'm still scarred by
that. Erase that from your mind.
Yeah, I think many others are still scarred by that. When you've seen so many Championship games, you realise, and I know it's a cliche, the thing with cliches are that they're often true. That's the thing with cliches. They often ring true. And in this division, honestly, you really don't know what's going to happen in the next game. The fixtures we've got coming up, people will look at them and think, oh, they've got a good chance here. And indeed they have. But all the games, I'm never surprised by any results. One of the things about the Premier League season, when we were there for one season, was that as I drove to games, I often knew what the outcome would be as far as win, lose or draw. And it became very predictable, unfortunately. When I drive to Championship games, I'll be honest with you, I've no idea whether they'll win, lose or draw. I've got an inkling, I've got a feeling, but you just don't know. And so even though we've got these five games coming up and people will look at them and think, oh, there's points up for grabs there, you know, you can never tell. And I've seen Derby go on runs of eight games without a win, as well as eight games unbeaten. So it's that easy in the Championship. At the moment, they're on a great run, and that's, you know, they want to remain on that great run if they can. Being unbeaten in the Championship is crucial. If you can do that, if you can keep chipping away and keep adding points. And the other important thing is when they lose, and they will lose a game sometime because that's the nature of it. When you lose a game at this level, as they did at QPR at the beginning of November, the key is don't lose the next game. Because what happens in the Championship, you can lose one, you can lose two, and before you know it, you lost five. You know, the key is to stop it immediately, and they did that after the QPR game, and they've won five on the spin since then.
Very true. Very true indeed. Always got to bounce back and get that next result on the board. It's a hallmark of championship winning teams. But as you say, I mean, a lot can happen in 3 weeks, five games before that Chelsea game. But as it stands, Chelsea are having some real defensive problems at the moment. Their selection is changing week in, week out. You know, teams that you would used to be, you expect Chelsea to make light work of, such as Stoke at the weekend, they're scoring three past them all of a sudden. Sunderland scored three the other week. So if Derby keep going the way they're going and Chelsea do, we could have a really exciting game on our hands.
Are you predicting 5-5? the last two games for Chelsea, I mean, before that, defensively, they were quite strong. I think they've conceded six in the last two, haven't they? Which is very unlike them to be honest, and you would imagine that the coach they've got may well have nailed that down before they come to town in January. But no, I mean, let's be honest, the draw has created a real buzz here. There's two things with the FA Cup. One, you can look at it and say, well, I want as many, I want to get as far as I can, so it could give me the easiest ties if there's any such thing. Or two, is you want a big tie at home, and they've got a big tie at home against attractive opposition. Derby are going well. Chelsea have got so many terrific players. It's going to be a special afternoon. The way it's panning out, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a sellout because, you know, gates at Derby, as you're aware, are always very good. Chelsea will bring a good following. May well be live on television. I think we'll find out whether it is or not in the next day or two. But it looks a special game to me. And I hope Derby... Well, one of the problems you have with big games like this is, you know, you can freeze on the day. I hope Derby don't, because at the moment they're playing really good football, they're very, very confident, and if results continue to go for them between now and then they should be in a real good position and also a very confident mood. And I hope they go out and play their football. If they do, we could be in for an entertaining afternoon.
Thanks for coming on, Steve. Really nice to talk to you.
No problem.
Cheers,
no
buddy. That is Steve Nicholson, who's the chief football writer at the Derby Telegraph. And next, we're dropping down to League One, where the Bees need a new boss. So, what a weird week to be a Brentford fan. A real mix of delight and disappointment, I imagine. Delight after plans for a new 20,000 all-seat stadium at Lionel Road were approved finally by Hounslow Council on Thursday night, but disappointment that the manager who pushed them so close to promotion last season, who'd just been named League One Manager of the Month of November, has gone. Uwe Rosler has been appointed as the new manager of Wigan Athletic, becoming the first manager in Brentford's history to leave and walk straight into a managerial position at a higher level. But where does this leave them? They're out of the FA Cup. They lost to Carlisle on Saturday, but they're still fourth in the league and just 6 points off the automatic promotion places. Nick Bruzon is a big Brentford fan, the author of the Brentford Last Word blog, and we've had Nick on the show a couple of times before. I'm pleased to say he's back on the phone right now. Nick, how much of a blow, first of all, is it to everyone at the club, the fans, the players, the staff, that Rosler has decided to leave?
Being honest with you, Mark, and good evening. It is a huge blow on the surface, and I guess a massive sign of what Uwe was doing, because only eight games ago, he was public enemy number one after a bit of a dodgy run and the Colchester United game. There were fans calling for his head. And then, as you say, we went on that run. It's taken us up to fourth place in the table, 22 points out of a possible 24. And the team are really, really flying. So for him to leave at this stage, just as he's got the boys all firing and the fans back on side, it's a huge blow for us, to be quite honest.
But he has left, although perhaps unexpectedly, he has left behind, as you say, a good team, a team that's in form now, finally, this season. You had a fantastic season last year in League One, so unlucky not to be promoted in the end. So there is, you know, a real opportunity for somebody to come into a job in circumstances in which you don't often come into jobs. Usually when you come into jobs in the Football League or wherever, it's because a team is struggling really badly and are bereft of confidence and form. But that's not the case at Brentford. So if someone can come in and hit the ground running, you still could have a great season.
Well, that's it. And, you know, one of the many great, great things that Uwe has done is build this team up. And it's the same team that, but for a couple of players, I think I said earlier, has been growing together and learning together and playing together. So whoever does come in and takes over, they've got it all, not on a plate, but they've got a lot easier situation than, say, coming into a bottom three, bottom four team, because the boys are on fire and long they will definitely need direction. But for the minute, you know, the first team names itself, and the first team is on fire.
Who do you want as your new manager, Nick?
Now, there is a question. My heart would love it to be Mr. Holloway. He's a former Brentford player, for one thing. He's got a reputation at this level. He's got a reputation at championship level. And he's what we're
got a reputation at Premier League level, really.
Well, yeah. And, you know, he did awfully well with Blackpool and was really unlucky not to keep them up in the end. And if nothing else, the character, the personality, he's almost like a Martin Allen, but with talent. So,
Poor Martin.
I was going to mention Martin Allen.
You say Martin Allen, what about him?
Yeah, I think we've been there, done that.
Yeah.
You know, Martin Allen only takes jobs when the teams are in trouble, though, doesn't he? He's a firefighter. Yeah. He's not someone that tends to get people up.
I don't want to get drawn into a Martin conversation. He's a unique individual, a fantastic person, but, you know, being there, had his chance and almost did a job for us. But, no, the heart would love it to be Mr. Holloway. At the minute, if you check the bookmakers' odds, Mark Warburton, the current sporting director, seems to really, really be the bookie's favourite. But a day ago, it was Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank who's gone from evens out to 14-1. So
well, you should say that,
yes.
Isn't it? Because when we did the pod from Griffin Park,
and we spoke to you, Nick, when we were there,
when we played late in Orient, who did we see as we were going into the ground? Walk past us, Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. So he's been to Brentford already this season.
So well, what do you know? Maybe he was spotted, but. You know, I mean, it really is an absolutely open field, and there are some reports saying the club have had up to 60 inquiries already. Mark knows the players, he knows the setup. He's the one that really has got a lot of these players in.
I have seen a couple of stories about Neil Warnock, Nick. A story in one of the local papers today saying he's ready to become Brentford's new boss, but only on a one-season basis to start with. Apparently, a source was quoted as saying, Neil has a few irons in the fire. We should know. We've already talked about it the last couple of weeks. He says, if the club was willing to give it a go for this season, then it would be good to talk.
Yeah, this is the same Neil Warnock that's about to come Sheffield Wednesday manager a few days ago.
But, I mean, Neil Warnock, I can absolutely confirm to you, given that I work with him on a weekly basis, is... But, you know, all of a sudden, bang up for getting into management again.
I thought we had an exclusive for a second.
I think he lost a bit of the fight at Leeds and he left, kind of was a bit fed up with it and kind of retired back to Cornwall and doing his media stuff and was very happy. But, you know, he's made no secret of the fact that he wants to get back into management, and he did turn the Sheffield Wednesday job down in the end despite being offered it, I think, because he just thought it'd just be too much of a challenge being with his history in Sheffield United. But he wants to get back in, and... You know, Brentford, it would be a good opportunity for him. I don't think there's many other clubs at the moment that he's going to, you know, like I said at the start, you'd expect Warnock to take a job where it's have to be him having to keep someone up for the end of the season. But if he was to get the Brentford job, he's got a real opportunity to go up. But, you know, I'm not sure whether he would be the right fit for you.
Do you know what? And this will probably come back to bite me on the backside when he's revealed in a few days' time, but he really wouldn't be my choice. You know, Matthew Benham is a young, exciting club owner. He took a massive punt with Uwe, or so we thought, and ultimately he's proven he knew what he was doing. And I think he'll be looking to go down the same route, whether it's employing from within his own established team or getting another young manager. There's a lot of talk as well about Solskjaer. You know, could he come from Norway as Uwe did?
Unlikely, I think. You mentioned Matthew Benham there. He's been asking the fans, hasn't he, on Twitter, which is good to see. He says, we're currently searching for the next Brentford manager. Who will be the best man or woman for the job?
Yeah, I mean, Matthew's great like that from one respect, in that he really, really gets involved with the fans. From another respect, it's frustrating because it feels, and I don't mean this in a nasty way, almost like he's toying with us or teasing us, because he's dropping his cryptic clues and we're all desperate to find out, we're all desperate to get involved. And he loves it and we love it.
Does there need to be an air of urgency, though, Nick, about it, about the appointment, given UA left the team doing quite well, as we've already mentioned? So you don't fall into a bit of a malaise and start to drop points. Does the appointment need to be made sooner rather than later, or can he afford to take a few weeks over the decision?
I think short term, there's no particular issue. As I say, you've got a very, very settled coaching and backroom team. Mark Warburton, Peter Farrell, Alan Kernaghan, they've all been around the club for a couple of years. They know the system, they know the players know the system. I think any longer than a couple of weeks, and we're getting into that busy Christmas period, you want to know where the team's going and what it's going to be doing. And if it is at Warburton as a choice, then good luck to him. Let's get it nailed on sooner than later. But in the immediate short term, I'm not too perturbed. I'd rather the right man was picked for the job. And, you know, with Uwe, it took quite a while to get him established in the end. You know, the fans were wondering for ages, who's it going to be, and it turned out it was him.
and as it happened, it was a inspired choice, really.
Right, let's talk about something slightly more positive rather than sort of all sort of doom and gloom about where we're going to go, who's the new manager going to be. What about this stadium then, Nick? Tell us all about it. Finally approved this week. Lionel Road is going to happen. How important is that for the future of the club?
Well, absolutely massive. The club's made no secret over the last, 11 years it's been in the works. It is the future of Brentford Football Club. It's still very much in the borough of Hounslow. It's a really, really exciting design, a stadium of shape and character as opposed to an identikit bowl. And it's only half a mile away from where we are at the moment, maybe a touch more, but certainly well within walking distance of Griffin Park. And all of a sudden, we have a home that's going to be modern, exciting, rather than a Griffin Park, which, much as I love it, and I do, it's looking very much jaded around the edges, should we politely say.
Nick, I was reading your last word blog on this, and you talk quite candidly about how close this was to not happening, and how it's been dragged on for over a decade now. So just how close was it the other day when this, this council meeting, really, wasn't it, came to a head? Just how close was it to finally being cancelled once and for all? Or was this always going to eventually happen and Brentford would finally be given this new home on Lionel Road?
Well, nothing is eventual in life, let alone football. And whilst the council planning committee had recommended it be approved a few days beforehand, there was close to 1,000 people in that public meeting where the issue was debated. And it went long into the night, started at 7:30, and the vote was finally made just before midnight. And listening there and standing there, it was an awful lot closer than I thought it was ever going to be. Some of the Conservative councillors were very much opposed to it. There was an awful lot of inflammatory statements being thrown around from their side. A lot of people who didn't really, in my eyes, get football. It really was a bureaucratic process where footballing matters and equally housing matters, because there's the associated flats that go with the project plan, were being discussed and debated. And it was quite tense, but I have to say, absolute credit to the Brentford team that got involved. It really was a phenomenal presentation. What seemed like some awfully tricky questions being answered very, very well and very openly and very honestly. So a tense night, an exciting night, and in the end, the right decision was made.
So, as you said, there's been a lot of talk. Mark Devlin hailed it as a huge day for Brentford, and it's all about looking to the future and trying to sustain and build a club that can compete at the level above in the Championship and who knows where from there. I understand that. I understand that that needs modern facilities and everything, but if you just look at the attendance levels at Griffin Park, and the capacity of Griffin Park is 12,763. Your average attendance this season is 6,700, so you're about half filling your ground on average each week. That's 20,000 will be able to be seated in Lionel Road. There's you've got to find a lot of fans to fill this new stadium. And do you think if you were to get promoted into the Championship, would you ever be able to get anywhere close to filling Lionel Road on a regular basis?
I am absolutely convinced we would. You look at the interest around the football club last season when we were getting towards the business end of the season, when we had Chelsea in the FA Cup, even when we had Southend in the FA Cup the round before. If the team are doing well, the fans are there. You look at the likes of Fulham. Back in the 90s, they were in the division below Brentford, what was the old fourth tier. They were getting nobody turning up at their place by the river. You look at them now, they're struggling to sell out, but they're getting a good 15,000, 16,000 minimum. And when the big teams come...
They're in the Premier League, though.
They're in the top flight, but...
Well, if Brentford can get promoted, that's only going to help attendances, isn't it?
Hmm.
Well, that's my logic. And we haven't been in the second tier as is since 1993. But back then, Griffin Park capacity, about the same as it is now, we were regularly selling out and regularly getting full houses and big crowds. You go to the Championship, football's profile has become a lot bigger in the last 20 years than it was then. Lionel Road will sell out, I've got no doubt, no worries about that, as long as the team are there and the team are playing in a higher tier.
Nick, one final question, to be expected, I think, and it's probably the most important one we've just asked.
Absolutely.
Will the new ground have a pub on every corner?
The new ground will have, one hopes, and we have yet to see the final design specs of certainly what we call refreshment outlets, but they are looking to have drinking areas all around.
Well, remember when Wembley was knocked down? Well, how long ago now? What, 8 years ago, something like that?
No, more than that. 2000, wasn't it? Yeah, last game.
Yeah, okay, well, a long time ago now. there was all that talk of could they potentially save the Twin Towers and maybe, you know, crane them out of the old thing, save them and put them back into the new development and stuff. Well, could we do that? Could we get the pubs, sort of just seal them off somehow, keep them safe, and then just get them on the back of a lorry up the road, up the Hammersmith flyover, and just put them down on each corner of the new ground?
It's a great thought. And, you know, you mentioned Wembley. At the time, it was the Twin Towers, almost like this iconic treasure that can never be replicated or replaced. And now we've got a spanking new stadium. They've got the huge arch. It's like,
but it's just not as good, though, is it?
Well, I'd worry about the four pubs there at the moment. What's going to happen
with them? But it's not. I mean, to make a serious point, like, I understand that it's a good thing for the club.
Hang on a minute. Hang on a second.
It's not as good. It's not as fun being in Wembley as it used to be in the old one. And I dare say,
it
won't be the same in the new Lionel Road.
You cannot say put four pubs in a truck, lift them up, and then follow that up with a serious point in
inverted covers. And there is going to be some sadness leaving Griffin Park, surely, because you're going to lose something.
We will. But there's one thing I've always said about Brentford, and I've been a supporter since the late 70s. It really is a family club, and it really is a fans club. And somehow or other, everybody gets involved. There's always been this massive, massive element of community. And whilst they're not going to build four spanking new pubs, that's for sure, if for no other reason, one of them's my local, and if anyone tries to lift that out, then it's going to be worse. But, you know, they will come up with something unique.
Well, are the pubs going to stay? Because they're not, I mean, they say four pubs on every corner. They're not actually part of the ground as such, are they? I mean, what's happening to Griffin Park? Is that turning into houses? Will these pubs still be there?
The pubs will stay. Whether they stay in business is another question, but they're part of the community and not hermetically sealed into the stadium. So the ground will be knocked down and turned into new housing, presumably. But the pubs will be there.
Excellent. Well, just get yourself a flat in the old site and then you're all good.
Well, I only live about 10 minutes away, so I'll make sure I go down there more often, keep them going. Nick, thanks very much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Chat.
That is Nick Bruzon, who is the author of the Brentford Last Word blog. Next is time for the return of My Club, the bit of the show where we give Football League fans 125 seconds to tell us all about their club, all to celebrate the 125th anniversary of the Football League. And today, the focus, the spotlight, is on Torquay United.
This is We Are Going Up, My Club in 125 seconds.
Hello, my name's James Bennett, and my club is Torquay United.
So, James, straight away, from the accent, can you tell us how you ended up being a Torquay fan?
My dad is from Torbay, so he was a Torquay fan from being a child, and he passed it on to me despite living in Wales.
And what was your first ever game as a Torquay fan?
My first game was actually in Cardiff. Cardiff played Torquay in November 1997, finished a 1-1 draw. My first game at Playmore then was a 1-1 draw against Watford in the FA Cup a month later.
Oh, brilliant. I'm a Watford fan myself. Do you remember who scored that day?
Yeah, Gifton Noah Williams.
Oh, Gifton.
Gifton Noah Williams.
Dan Gurney scored for Torquay.
Excellent.
Debut mentioned on the pod, I think. Who's your favourite Torquay player from the past 16 years, whatever that is, since 97?
Rodney Jack, who was our striker.
Rodney Jack? Gifton Noah Williams and Rodney Jack? This is superb. Go on.
Yeah, I remember he had a strike partnership with Jason Roberts at the time. Jason Roberts came in on loan. And we got into the playoffs largely on the back of his form.
You've probably not had too many best moments this season, James. What is your best moment as a Torquay United fan?
I would have to say just about promotion back to the Football League at Wembley in 2009 when we beat Cambridge United. I think that just about edges getting promotion to League One. Mainly because I was at Wembley, but I wasn't at the Southend game when we got promoted to League One. So,
would I be right in saying your lowest moment is relegation out of the Football League?
Yeah, I would say so. I remember I was at the match at Playmore the day we got relegated against Peterborough, 1-1 draw, and just the final whistle blew, there was an eerie silence over the ground. And I never experienced anything like that before.
Well, the problem is you might experience it again the way you're going. What do you make of Alan Nil?
I'm not a massive fan, to be honest. We're trying to play some attractive football, but then other players seem to be hoofing it. No clear philosophy there.
Let's keep bringing the mood down, though, James. Do you think you will get relegated this season?
I have a feeling we... Oh, yeah. I don't think we've got the money to dig ourselves out of it.
Nice try, Carl, but I think that's backfired. James, best of luck for the rest of the season. Your 2 minutes is up. Thank you.
Cheers, Mark.
My club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
So we'll have another one of those on the show next week, and extra points if you can squeeze in references to brilliant forgotten 90s footballers. I think we're all up for that. Right, let's start our roundup of what's been going on in the Football League over the last 7 days. We talked about Ross leaving Brentford. What about it from a Wigan perspective, DC? Dave Whelan says it's a move which is costing the region of £500,000 for Wigan, which I suppose perhaps they can afford, having won the FA Cup and being in Europe. But what do you reckon? Good appointment?
I think it's an interesting appointment. It's interesting to see that Rosler has said that they'll have a return to the Roberto Martinez way, which I think was where a lot of the problems stemmed from Owen Coyle, certainly from the fans' perspective. They weren't happy with the football that Coyle had introduced, considering the, you know, the great, if ultimately unsuccessful, football that they'd had under Martinez for so many years. So he's going to play good football. He's got a reputation for doing that at Brentford. I think at Brentford, you know, some people may look at him and think, well, we never got them out of the league despite having a good squad.
Did everything, didn't he?
So I think you've got to look at the circumstances last season. He was very, very unlucky down on that last day against Doncaster. Were it not for that incredible situation with the penalty, they would have been in the Championship now. So I think you can certainly say that Rosler's done a good job at Brentford and probably does deserve a chance to show that he can do it at a higher level with Wigan.
And I think it's a good appointment. And do you remember he got Martinez in from Swansea? I know he's the next player, but he was further down the Football League.
Yeah.
Foreign manager came in.
I think it makes sense from Rosler's point of view as well, because his family are up in Wilmslow, I think, in the greater Manchester area. And, you know, that is a strain on you. You know, if you're commuting a big distance every day and you're not with your family, you know, he might be more comfortable up in that area. So he, you know, that's a good thing. It's a good positive for him. And he certainly, as we discussed a few weeks ago when Coyle left, he's got a good squad of players there. And
a few weeks ago, it was last week.
There should be some money as well to spend in a January transfer window if he sees fit. So I think it's a good move for Wigan, and it's certainly a very good move for Rosler.
Another one of the managers which we did discuss in that big special last week was Sean O'Driscoll, who left Bristol City. Steve Cottrell, Carl, has come in.
A West Country lad, if ever there was one.
And replaced him. They made that move pretty quickly. What do you make of that?
Supposedly, he was the man they wanted all along. He'll probably do fine. He can't do much worse than what Sean O'Driscoll was doing, in honesty. But it doesn't strike me as a kind of a fresh, innovative appointment, I must admit. Dave, I don't know if you think it is a wise appointment, but
absolutely
I don't
not.
Think it is.
I think it's the exact opposite. I think they've bottled it. Bristol City have been coming out, as we said with Sean last week, coming out for a while now saying, you know, it's all about the long-term plan, long-term philosophy, trying to create something that lasts, you know, a long period of time, getting the wage bill down, you know, patience, all these words were used. And what they've done, the first opportunity they had to stick by their own words and by their philosophy, they've not taken it, and they've gone for Steve Cottrell, who is a man, with the exception of his job that he did at Cheltenham, did very well at Cheltenham a long time ago now. He's not got a very good record, you know, really anywhere since. He's lost more games than he's won, I think, pretty much in every other club, with possibly the exception of his short spell at Notts County. He will point to his record at Notts Forest, at Nottingham Forest.
Careful.
Sorry. Nottingham Forest. Sorry. Nottingham Forest, saying that he saved them and they were sinking like a stone there. And, you know, fair enough, maybe he should deserve some credit for that, but he's not a man that will inspire confidence in the fans, I don't think, and it smacks for me of short-term thinking. And I think they should have stuck with O'Driscoll.
I mean, they have got the squad to stay up. Let's just see what he does do. But of course, O'Driscoll, they were playing a decent style of football eventually, if it wasn't getting all the results they needed.
But they were going in the right direction.
You've got them in the FA Cup as well, haven't you?
We have. We've drawn them away at Ashton Gate. We don't have the best record down there, I don't think. But I might try and get
excuse in early.
Final little manager bit in this roundup is that Richie Barker has gone to Portsmouth now.
And Steve Coppell.
And Steve Coppell as well. I didn't realise them two came as a little sort of double act these days. But we talked about the fact that when Portsmouth eventually... When rumours were that he'd left Crawley, it was because he was going to go to Portsmouth. And then apparently they approached Chris Wilder and we didn't think it was going to happen. But he has gone in there. And he was speaking about Rosler living far away from his family. Richie Barker, one of the reasons he's moved sort of further progressively down the country is because his wife lives in Brighton. So he's not.
Why
be
are all these managers living away from home so far away? It's not like they're on, you know, short wages and, you know, the expensive prices of within the M25 are out of their reach financially. Why is that?
No idea.
Well, that's maybe for a special show 1 week when we've run out
that's
of stuff to talk about.
Problem. And they're all nomads, aren't they? But I think, you see, again, it's a sort of quite an interesting appointment from Portsmouth. I think Wilder looks to be like the man who they wanted to take over initially, but Wilder, I think, quite wisely has decided to not take that opportunity. Barker, he's got a, you know, he's got a team out of League Two. He, as we discussed, decent enough record with Crawley in League One. You've got a man there, Steve Coppell, who's very experienced alongside him. In theory, that partnership, you know, should be quite stable and should work for Portsmouth. And if Barker can get Portsmouth, you know, working with the limited sort of resources that they have, that, you know, the big attraction for any manager going to that job is the fan base, is the club, is the history at that level. They are bigger than any other club in that division by far in terms of the supporters that turn up week in, week out. So if they can get it moving, there's something exciting there for them, but it ain't going to be easy.
Right, enough managers anyway. Let's talk about some of the games which took place over the weekend. Blackpool in discipline, 5-1 defeat at Derby. We touched on it earlier. They had two players sent off, or yes, three players sent off against Yeovil, and then two more players sent off for the weekend. In fact, their manager also had a massive ban, didn't he, as well? So here's the timeline. Jack Robinson sent off at Bournemouth, 14th of September. Ango Martinez sent off at Huddersfield, 27th of September. Paulins at Bournemouth, given that big five-match stadium ban, 8th of October. Jack Robinson sent off against Blackburn on the 26th of October. And then five players sent off this week.
Yeah, and they've been defending their record and saying it's not down to ill discipline, it's just down to poor decision-making from the players. Paulins had a go at the players who he said let them down in the game against Yeovil, then two more go and get sent off at Derby. I mean, Paul Ince can't exactly speak though, can he? Because what a terrible example he
well, exactly.
You read that transcript from that hearing back, and hasn't got a leg to stand on. Comes from the top, and it looks like his players are following suit. It's not good enough, simply, is it? Because Blackpool don't have the biggest squad in the world, and all of a sudden that's five players in two games that are going to be suspended. Their two main centre backs getting sent off against Yeovil, going up against a team who are in rampant form such as Derby. It just puts you on the back foot before you've begun. And Ricardo Fuller getting sent off for, you know, an attempted headbutt as well. He's a senior player,
then
he should know better, and it's ridiculous.
He's come up with a number of excuses though, Paul Ince, for this. One of it was because of expectations and players getting frustrated. But reading here quotes Reddy gave to BBC Radio Lancashire, which is probably even worse excuse coming up, but it's because they're tired. Other teams don't have fixtures away at Bournemouth and then Millwall. Well, they do. Every team has to play Bournemouth and Millwall away in that league, and then go away to Yeovil on a Tuesday morning. He's referring to games here in September. So
None of these sendings off took place in September.
Paul, it's a man who's played at the very highest level, you know, travelled around the world with Manchester United and England, and he's using excuses like that. It is quite poor, not really covering himself in any particular glory. Fines will probably be coming their way.
Did you see, just on Paul Ince quickly, we didn't get a chance to touch on it last week, did we? But after the Yeovil game, he came up with this hilarious line. He was obviously seething after losing to Yeovil.
The Yeovil game was in midweek, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
So no wonder we couldn't talk about it last week. It hadn't happened.
And yeah, of course it was. Yeah, good point. But anyway, after the game, he said the Football League gave us a crap game on a Tuesday night at Yeovil, which was crap.
Say what you think, Paul.
Yeah.
What about the rest of the games at the weekend? Then we've got new leaders. Burnley back to the top, beating Barnsley by a goal to nil. That after Barnsley had gone and won at Brighton in midweek. And Leicester, who was singing the praises of a couple of weeks ago, have lost twice in a week. Lost at Sheffield Wednesday on Tuesday, and then they went down 3-1 at Brighton. A couple of brilliant goals in that game as well.
Yeah, indeed. Ashley Barnes as well, I've been impressed with. You know, with Brighton having Mikal Smith's been out for so long now. I saw him tweet the other day, actually, he's finally back running in training, which will be good news for Brighton fans. But Ulloa, has been out as well this season. So the mantle has been passed to Ashley Barnes to kind of step up to the plate and be the man up top for them. And for a player that's been pretty average, I think it's fair to say, in his career in the Championship, he seems to have stepped up quite well and taken on the responsibility well. But I was impressed with Brighton. Oscar Garcia won Manager of the Month, didn't he, as well? But there was no signs of the curse coming back to haunt him.
David Lopez with a couple of great assists as well.
Yep.
The ball he put in for the second goal was
Rezivan, had a good game, deputising for Kushak as well.
And credit to Andy King, an excellent diving header. Love a diving header.
He was in about 50 yards of space, though, wasn't he?
Doesn't matter. He can't beat a good diving header.
Leicester's next games are Burnley, QPR and Reading. Big.
Oof,
that's my analysis.
Well, I was going to say, don't say all difficult, because they'll probably end up winning all of those. No hard luck this season.
QPR nil, Blackburn nil. So QPR held. What else happened up at the top? Forest won 1-0 at Sheffield Wednesday. They're up to fifth. What's this about Billy Davies and a photographer or something?
Well, Billy Davies banned a photographer.
Right, that's right.
He went over to him at one of the games in the last few weeks and had a real go at him and his ban. Obviously, we know about the banning of the local press. He's banned journalists from The Guardian this season, generally not getting on well with the media. However, after that game against Sheffield Wednesday at the weekend, I was listening to his post-match interview on the Football League show, and he was kind of saying, well, people are going to get euphoric or they're going to get suicidal about league position and there's going to be headlines written, and I know people need to sell newspapers. I understand that. Really? Do you really understand that, Billy Davies? Why are you banning journalists from the game then if you know they need to sell newspapers?
Do you know, I just came up on my screen in front of me. It just said too loud.
Well, I mean,
that's how passionately he cares.
What a ridiculous thing to say.
But this is a photographer. Hypocrite. What's the photographer done wrong now?
I don't know what he did wrong at all, but Billy Davies has clearly lost it in that
picture
respect.
Of his bad side.
Quite an angry man, Billy Davies. Do you see Kevin Davies' goal for Preston in the FA Cup?
Screamer.
Oh, my days.
He doesn't score many like that, does he?
He doesn't. Sorry, I completely glossed over Leeds 3, Watford 3 there. Anything you want to say about that?
Yeah.
Two draws this week.
Look, against Burnley and against Leeds, probably 2 points away from home, probably would have taken it. Certainly the clean sheet against Burnley.
Didn't you win 6-1 at Leeds last season, though?
We did. This shows what's changed. But it was good to score 3 goals. But again, the problems are at the back. I mean, honestly, watching the second league's goal in particular, it really did remind me of the game I played yesterday afternoon at Sunday league level. Pathetic defending. There were 3 players.
By you?
Not necessarily by me. But three players all going for the same ball. There doesn't seem to be anyone taking charge of the defence at the moment. I don't know whether it's communication or what, but it didn't look good. This shambolic defending is coming back to bite us again. But at least we did get that point with that late equaliser from Deeney.
Congratulations to Sean Derry, who's got his first win.
And didn't he look like he needed it right on the touchline at the end. You saw him just look up to the heavens for about 10 seconds before he turned and shook his opposite manager's hand.
So that was the first win in 7 games.
Good
for
goals
Notts
as
County.
Well, wasn't it?
Jack Grealish on loan from Villa, the 18-year-old. What a goal that was.
Yeah, excellent. And you know, all 3 goals were great examples of composure and keeping your head from young players, no less, who you know had the chance maybe to shoot, but they didn't. They moved it, they shifted it, and they waited till the moment was right, and they scored some 3 good goals there.
Cheltenham, unbeaten in 8 games now. They won 1-0 in League 2 at Morecambe. That was the only game of the weekend.
Yeah, hilarious though. Did you
the goalmouth scramble.
I watched this again.
This is
I watched
brilliant.
This a number of times, and I counted 11 shots that were either blocked or completely missed in one case.
I think the average pinball game loss.
There was the overhead kick, which ended up being a pass. It was going out for a throw-in. It was absolutely brilliant.
I was going to say, we've had this conversation a few times. You've got like a couple of people that we know mutually, like Pete, for example, is whenever you try and say to him about, oh, come on, the standard in the Championship, the Football League's really good, he'll always go, no, it's not, whatever. And then we haven't really got a case to answer when you see a video like that, have we?
No, but it can happen, can't it? I mean, look,
it's the best.
It is unfortunate as well, the spotlight being on Morecambe against Cheltenham being with the only
spotlight
league,
being on
the,
it.
The only league game, only League Two game on Saturday. Due
interesting
to,
definition
due to the
FA spotlight.
Cup, but it was hilarious, wasn't it? But it, you know, it happens.
Okay, in the FA Cup, well done to Kidderminster and Grimsby, non-league teams knocking out league opposition. Michael Gash with a brilliant goal.
Come on, Grimsby. For Grimsby to have a cup run.
Some of the ties in the third round involving Football League clubs playing the Premier League opposition are as follows. Liverpool against Oldham on Mansfield, that replays on telly. Forest against West Ham, you'd think they've got a good chance in that game. Middlesbrough against Hull, Leicester at Stoke, Burnley at Southampton, Sheffield United at Villa, Blackburn hosting Manchester City, Carlisle at Sunderland, Everton against QPR, and as we mentioned earlier, Derby against Chelsea.
There's quite a number of all Premier League ties as well in the third round.
We're going to have one of our teams going further.
Well, it gives the opportunity to the Football League teams to go further.
Well, it's not going to happen with Swindon and Bury. So,
we lost to Cambridge in midweek.
Yeah, we lost to Macclesfield.
Get behind Watford then, lads.
I'm going to stay behind Macclesfield. I think
they've got Sheffield Wednesday.
Sheffield Wednesday, which is out of the non-league teams, is probably the best tie out of the four. Is it 4 or 5 teams that are remaining? I know Wrexham's still in it as we record this against Oxford United this evening. It's a shame that you see the likes of Arsenal v Spurs, because Liverpool versus Oldham, I know Oldham have got to get past Mansfield again, but given what happened last season,
well, it's interesting, isn't it?
That it'll be great to watch that again.
Both Oldham and Mansfield played Liverpool last season, didn't they, in the FA Cup? Oldham obviously winning, and one of them's going to get a chance to do it again.
Right, that's pretty much it for this week's show. We should say thank you to everyone who voted for us at the FSF Awards. We appreciate it.
All 17 of you. I don't know. We'll find out.
15 of those are marked on different queues.
We're actually going to be at the Emirates, obviously, for that awards. We've got one more show before then, though, which will be coming out next Monday, and then we're off to the big night next week. So we're going to record some stuff down there.
Are you going to record some stuff?
We can do. Yeah. See who's in the room. Yep. Try and work the room, and remember, if we win, you've got to go up to, who did you say, Aguero? whatever Premier
whoever
League.
Whoever wins a player of the season.
I'm hoping one of them will be sat on our table.
If you want to contact the show
never
this week.
Never mind the Ballon d'Or.
At Wagyu Podcast.
FSF Awards are the ones.
At Wagyu Podcast is the is how to get us on Twitter. Website is wearegoingup.co.uk. You read the blogs there. Also, subscribe, rate on iTunes and all that kind of thing.
And
SoundCloud.com/Wagyu Podcast.
Yeah,
and
but.
Mixcloud.
What else?
Mixcloud.
Yeah, one more. Christmas time.
You want to listen to a book or something? Lots of interesting
books have been released recently.
So when you're wrapping your Christmas presents, audible.co.uk
If you don't want to wrap your Christmas presents,
you're
terrible at wrapping Christmas presents, why not get an audio book? You don't have to wrap it, you can email it to someone.
I was thinking about listening to it while you wrap presents.
Well, they could do that as well. Listen to it whilst wrapping, whilst... That doesn't work.
Got ourselves in the right muddle. Right, that's it. We will speak to you. Do what he said. We'll speak to you in 7 days' time.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.